It's working. Good evening, everybody. Wow, today is the 2nd of June, and it's the beginning of a third term. For those who are new and who are going to sign up, hopefully, we give out free texts, which you can keep. Do you have a copy of the text?
No.
No, you don't. So you're going to need these complimentary along with a copy.
Thank you.
Okay, there you go. Does anyone else need a copy of the source text? Okay, if you've borrowed tonight, please come and give it back at the end. And so a few things just to recap over what Dovey said. One is, yes, please sign up for the third term. Each term is a bulk thing. Please see Dovey and organise that with him for the shul and stuff like that. Two is, we're going to have a new thing. And the new thing is, there's so many questions and it can get so completely pulled into other things. So there's a new thing based upon some comments that I've received from a few people. And it's going to be called COT. COT. C-O-T. And C-O-T stands for completely off topic. Completely off topic. Now, you can ask questions. You can ask questions. But the problem with that now is you might get caught. I might turn around and go, caught. And caught now stands for completely off topic. And completely off topic means I'll have to answer it. It's a new rule. It's a new rule. What is the best name for my pet octopus? Caught. It's completely off topic. I'd love to help you with it, but it's going to be something that we're going to deal with either outside of the shiur or at the end of the shiur or when we're going to have a big major recap, which is the end of each of the four sections of the text. Okay, in which case it's pretty much a free-for-all there and then. Okay, so it's going to be my new term, my new thing. Remember we had Richard in the middle, who's no longer, I don't know, where is Richard in the middle? Richard at the back, I don't know. We had all these names, people. There's a new thing now, and it's called COT. So I'm just going to go, COT. And just carry on. And everyone listening in the tape line will go, what did you just talk about a child's bedding? Go, no, he was talking about completely off topic. And you'll know that. If they're not listening to this one, they won't know that it's called COT. Is everyone okay with that so far? Well, you got COT down, yeah? Woo, that was good. Yeah, it's actually still working. Okay. What my plan is for tonight is I want to do a whiz recap to what we've done before. And then go on into the spiritual realm, which is the beginning of that new chapter that we started, and then carry on where we left off. Does that sound like a plan? So far, so good. Are you with it? You with me so far? Any questions so far, Dobby?
Why is the sun during the day and the moon's during the night?
Cot! Fantastic! In fact, other people can start sounding. If you feel as if other people can say, cot! I'm not wasting my. I'm paying for this air course, and that's a cot question. It's completely off topic, and if there's enough people that think it's cut, even if I don't think it's cut, as Lean and Acha arrive, I'll go to the Rove and I'll just say sorry, cut. It's been outvoted as cut. Even if it's a really interesting question, that's a very interesting question. Thank you very much for giving me that little bit of a taster for cut. I like that.
So it was on topic then?
It was on topic for cut. So you get the cut answer, yes.
No.
Very good. It's a tough crowd. Tough crowd, we have just started. Just started. Okay. All right, people. Here we go. What we're going to do is focus in, whiz through everything we've done so far, which is like a lot of work. If you think about it, this is term three, which means there's been two terms prior, which is what? Which is 12 sessions. But these sessions don't really last an hour, do they, folks? They last a little bit more than an hour. So let's call it, what, 20 hours of work that we put in so far? All in all, especially been catching up with all the downloads and listening to... And Lee isn't here tonight, but he told me that he'll be flying and listening to all the downloads. 10 hours straight. What a glutton for punishment. Just listening to it all. He's done it. You can do it. You can do it if you're glutton for punishment. And we'll run through all that in just a few minutes. I don't know if we can do this. Remember the blue orange? For those people who don't know about the blue orange, you have to listen to the first lecture, the last 20 minutes. Can't go over the blue orange again now. But we're all blue oranges. We aren't as real as God. Remember that? Everyone, apart from new people, are we all good with that idea? Why am I doing all the work? Why did the Creator create the universe according to Jewish philosophy? Now, you don't have to believe any of this. I always give this as a caveat. Don't you love this? You don't have to believe any of this. You can think it's I like Hindu. Where is Dr. Sid? I don't know. He's my general, because he knows Hinduism and Sikhism. You can believe whatever you want. All I'm going to tell you is what Jewish philosophy states. That's all I'm going to tell you, okay? According to Jewish philosophy, there is an infinite consciousness which is the creator of the entire universe. We've done all this. We've worked really, really hard through it. He doesn't have a body. He can't have a body. He's not a part of your soul. He can't be a part of your soul. It doesn't work like that. He's completely and totally infinite on a different level of reality to you. Why did he bother himself, as it were, to create the entire universe?
To give what is good to others.
Bing! That was 47 and a half points right there to Adrian. That was phenomenal. Those can be redeemed at the end for a small like catalogue with glasses and... That's right. He decided that he wanted to give of his good to another. A trick question. Why did he decide that?
Because a good person wants to, or a good being wants to do good things.
Why did he decide that?
I've just answered it.
Leon, say that louder.
We've got no idea.
We've got no idea. Why is it we've got no idea? Why is it that we can't have an idea to answer that question? Why does the buck have to start? That's the highest question.
What's the bar in
2D world, 3D world?
No.
Can't perceive.
No. God, what did God need to create the universe?
No.
No, did God want to create the universe?
Yes.
Why did God not need to create the universe?
Because
he's perfect and he doesn't need anything. So if he doesn't need anything, why did he make anything? Why can't we? Very good.
We need everything.
Ah, this is for the tape, for the tape. Everyone says, please repeat the thing for the tape. Daniel just said, the answer is yes. Every single thing we want in our lives, we need. It all comes from a need. All the things that we have are needs. God has no needs. He can't because he's totally perfect, which means he's devoid of any deficiency, which means he can't have any needs. So he wanted to create the universe. But he didn't need to create the universe. So because he wanted to, if you want to say, why did he want to? You can't think like that because every time you think of the word want, it's always really based on a need. One way or another. She can't, so it has to stop there from a human capacity. Excellent answer, Leon. Has to stop there from a human capacity answer. Very good. Okay, I know we've done all this, etc. You could talk about this for hours, couldn't you, really? But and we did. And we did. But we have to move on. So now that God created the entire physical universe, and he wanted to give of his goods to another. What? Let's just jump to the, let's jump the gun, really. What is that other? Who is it that God wanted to give of his good to? Human beings. And we argued left and right. What about extraterrestrials and other planets? And what do they do? And what are they there for? And they're sentient. And there's 18,000 other worlds which are populated by sentient beings, according to Gemara Sanhedrin. It's amazing what they're doing. We talked about left and the bottom line is the focal point of all creation is humanity. Is this ringing any bells for people that were here previously? Okay, that means everything else in the universe, peanut butter, vultures, pancakes, giant squid, meteorites, are all somehow, I don't know, that's a very interesting collection of items, by the way, are all somehow involved in creating a biosphere, an atmosphere, an environment, an arena for this human being to exist. When this human being exists, what has this human being got to do in its role? What is, now we're jumping all the way ahead to human responsibility here, big chapter that took two and a half sessions. What is human responsibility? God created the entire universe for this, to give of his good to another. Remember Paul and Natalie when they go to San Maritz and they go in their yacht and they're sitting there in the rear, he comes up and goes, how'd you get here, psychic rabbi, big check, all that business. I know for the people that aren't here thinking, that sounds really odd, but it really is true. We went through this whole thing about the fact that if they were to get their reward early, what would be the problem? Why did God necessitate creating the universe, having us go through this difficult life where there's Ebola, landmines, nasty things? Why do we need to be here? Why can't we just cut to the chase and God says, listen, had I've created a physical universe that you would have gone through, this is where you would have gone. I want to save you having to get a cough and a cold because I love you so much. And I'm just going to put you there and that's what you would have done and enjoy it. Why is that a problem? Why cannot he do that? Why is it impossible for God to do that? Why would that be bad?
It makes us perfect.
Sorry?
It makes us perfect.
No, we can't ever be perfect. No, only God can be perfect.
It requires no input from us in order to produce a better universe or a better world. Tikkun Olam, yeah?
We need that feeling of earning.
Oh, what is it? Sorry, say it out loud, Daniel, again.
We need that feeling of earning.
Bing! 48 and 3/4 points! Just a little fraction ahead there, Aiden, for tonight. We need that feeling of earning. Why do we need that feeling of earning? Why do we feel, why do we have to have that feeling?
Because Daniel's imperfect.
Not very, no, that's not Daniel Perfect. You're just jealous. That's what happened there. You're jealous about that fraction. So you wanted to knock it go that fraction. Who's to say it's an arbitrary unit? Why do we need to feel as if I did it? When God says, do you remember the time? And you had that pork sandwich in M&S and you were about to scan it through and then you said, no, I don't want to eat it. And you put it back. Well, I'm going to give you this universe for that. And you go, you know what? It was really tough. Thanks for the universe. Now, maybe you didn't have a pork sandwich and then God just gave you and said, had there been such a thing as M&S? Have I invented pigs and made them? How I've had slaughterhouse and entire logistical framework to make pigs on granary bread at MS and you get angry and you wouldn't have had it, then you would have got this and I want to give you that universe now. You have to say no. I know I was there and I have to have that feeling. Why is it we need that feeling? Come on, guys, work with me. Why do we have
to... You need a feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah. Why, good? Why?
Get close to the
no. We need that feeling because otherwise we would not be the true masters of that good. We would feel as if, yes, I'm very happy to have all this wonderful bounty that you're giving me, but I don't really know that I did it. Yeah. And because I don't really know that I accomplished it, it's somehow lacking. And because of that fractional lacking, God cannot give it to you. Because God's perfect. And he can't give anything unless he does so perfectly. And I mean perfectly. There can't be a shred of error anywhere. If he gave it to you and you've got a thing, you go, look, I'm really enjoying all the millions in the multi-euro lottery turnover and I'm really having a good time here, but I never played the lottery. Okay, so fine, doesn't matter, I just enjoy it. No, but that shred at the back means God can't be doing it because he's utterly devoid of any deficiency, which means when he gave it to you, it wasn't a perfect giving. So he is the limiting factor in that. Do you understand that answer, Adam? Do you feel totally... Is everyone understand that so far? Everyone understand that so far? Everyone comfortable?
Not really, no.
Okay, well, can we discuss it at the end then? Because
right.
Most people are like, okay, yeah. Okay. Whew. So now we've got that far. So fine, now we got that far. So that justifies, I know that's a lot of work that we went through, but that justifies why you have to make an entire physical universe, why you have to be in it, why you are presented with choices, and why you have to overcome them. Definition time. What did we say is the definition of good?
Devoid of bad.
Oh, that's a slick, difficult answer. Define me what is good.
Because you said perfect, devoid of imperfection. So.
Well, what is good? What is good? Good and bad. Remember, when Adam and Eve were in the garden, it says the snake said to them, you'll know good and bad.
Yeah.
So he said that before they ate, they didn't know good and bad. Okay.
To...
What? So, what did they know before they knew good and bad?
What did they know before they knew good and bad?
Yeah, the snake said, if you eat of this, you'll know. It's called the eight of dust.
You're
five.
Good.
No,
for
knew,
what?
They knew good and bad.
No, they didn't. Weird. No, they didn't.
Great.
There was no good and bad.
You're probably right. Just good.
There was no good and bad in the. There's no what is good and bad. Remember, I told you what you thought was
good.
Good
is closeness to God.
No. Oh, say
and
it again.
Bad is...
Good is close, as you said. 47 and a half other points. Imagine how Adrian's riling in his shoes.
And he can do bad.
Good is closeness to God. Bad is distance from God. But they were not operating on good and bad in Gun Eden. They had to eat trafe food to destroy their consciousness to get down to the paltry level of good and bad. What level were they on prior to good and bad? The Torah says you... Go on.
The purest...
What is that? Give me that purest level of knowledge. What is that? What's better? What you thought was good at 16 probably isn't what you think is good now. The goalposts change. The goalposts change in life. What you thought was bad at 16 maybe isn't as bad as that now. God doesn't have... God's constant. He doesn't have... Well, you know, I thought pork was bad. Ah, let it go. Really, he's not going to do that. So what is he seeing? He's not seeing good and bad. He's seeing... Come on, guys. Truth and false. It's either utterly true or it's utterly false. That's the level of Adam and Eve. Well, her name was Adam and Isha. He called her Eve after the sin. So it was man and woman in that state of the Garden of Eden. They saw true and false. God operates on the true and false paradigm. It's man that brings in good and bad. Okay, remember this? This is all not new, not new. We good so far? So human responsibility boils down to what? God gave man a charge. That man means humanity, man and woman. What is the charge that he gave us? What did he tell us to do? He wants us to what? He wants us to get close to him. He wants us to do, basically, he wants us to refrain from certain behaviours and move in a pattern of other behaviours. And you put that together, so remember the 2Ders who live on a 2D land. Their eyes are completely flat. And you're 3D. Remember the Flatlanders, the book, the mathematical book? You go down and go, hello, 2Ders. They would not be able to perceive you. Their eyes could not see you because they have no third dimension. They can't see you. So I tell them to trace a path on the ground. And that would be like one of those artistic drawings that has the illusion of depth. And then when they figure it out, they go, my gosh, there's a third dimension. I go, yes, I'm in another dimension. I'm trying to lift you out of that binding. So what are the paths that we trace in our lives to increase our consciousness? Mitzvahs, 47.36 to you. He's really doing well tonight. Should be able to cash this in for a set of coasters. It's Adrian whispering to you. Say it's this. Really, it's Adrian. You'll work out a 10% commission with Adrian at the end. Okay. So mitzvahs, of which there are how many negative mitzvahs? Nearly close. 365. And positive mitzvahs are 248. Which is easier to do?
The non-ones.
The negative mitzvahs. Just don't do it. The going out and doing stuff is harder work. We said we brought in a Shara Tshuva from Rabbeinu Yonah that I brought in that says the main reward that is in store for us in this zone where God gives is from what?
Doing
the positive things. Doing the positive things are the real meat. That's the real bread and butter. Refraining from the negativity is something which is vital in order that we don't muck up the bread and butter. Is this good so far? Yeah. Is everyone on track? Is anyone upset with me more than usual? Adrian is. Adrian's like, I had 47 and a half. She said 53.4. No problem on that one. The other people can be 50. Okay. Ah, mitzvahs. That was mitzvahs. So we've covered mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is a behavioural pattern in order to increase our consciousness. Are you with me? Are you comfortable? Are you happy? I like that. Phew! So mitzvahs is the way. Now, what is the only thing we've got to give God? What's the only thing you've got?
Obedience.
Oh, wow, you guys are awesome and giving me an incredible feeling of nachas inside. No, really. You give him, that's the only thing we've got to give him. The only thing we've got to give him is our obedience, which is why everything he's asking of us involves a choice. Because all we've got to give him is obedience. That's all he's interested in. So he'll ask us to choose. This obviously points out why man needs free choice. Because otherwise there's no point, because then you can't give him obedience. There's nothing else to give him. So what are you here for? You can't justifiably say, look, I did what you wanted me to do. Before you do a mitzvah, if it's a mitzvah that you've been told to do, we make a bracha, asher kitishanu b'mitzvaysa v'tzivanu, who sanctified me and commanded me. Why is it we make that bracha of kitishanu v'tzivanu? Come on, guys. Clive, you know this one. Sleeping!
The special benefits within that mitzvah is the kitishanu.
Very good.
And the mitzvah itself is the commandment itself, obeying the commandment of doing that mitzvah.
Excellent. For the tape, doing a vertivana, God said, do this. So I am being obedient by doing what you told me to do. I thereby deserve your reward justifiably. You told me to dwell in a sukkah, I'll dwell in a sukkah. That's what you want, I'll do it. But we also said, there's a special packet of sanctity that is involved with each individual behavior that can only be gained through doing that particular behavior. And that sanctification is the kiddushanu element. But all these mitzvahs are like components soldered into a motherboard, a circuit board. So a circuit board gives framework, and then you stuff all the mitzvahs, all the components on that circuit board to make it work. Which is why an individual resistor may be worthless. But if one fell out of your computer, you take it into a computer repair shop and then have to put it back. That's why we said there's no value for mitzvahs. You can't turn around and say, which is the biggest mitzvah, which is the smallest mitzvah. It doesn't work like that. Which is the biggest component, which is the less big component? We talked about the heart versus the liver versus a lady's small toe. Was it your wife's small toe? I think it was your wife's small toe. Yeah. How many? Was it your wife's small toe? Sophie's small toe, right? She was willing to sell a small toe for 100 quid, right? But would she do that for her liver? The answer was obviously on absolute terms, the liver is more important. Obviously, in absolute terms, the liver is more important than a little toe. But globally, we love all of our bodies, irrelevant of what the organ is. You can't say one's more important than the other. You need the whole package. We love every little screw, nook and cranny that's in the engine of our car, because if one fell out, we'd be worried. Not that the screw's intrinsically that much more valuable than the piston or something like that. The mitzvahs, yeah, Shabbos, very big, kashrus, all these things. But every mitzvah's vital because they're all components on the circuit board. And the whole board doesn't work. But a corollary of that was what? That if you learn Torah, which is the circuit board, you are technically connected to all the mitzvahs. Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Which is why we learned that if you learn about a mitzvah, even if you don't practice it, you are still gaining some connection to that mitzvah. Do you remember that? So if you learn about Pesach, but you don't keep Pesach, yeah, there's a problem about not keeping Pesach, but at least you can say, learning about it has given me an affinity for that, a connection to the sanctity, because it's only being fed by the circuit board to that component, and I'm still connected to that concept. This shouldn't be weird, brand new stuff. All of this should be going over old ground for those people who've been here before. Are we good? So the mitzvahs are designed. Ruth, you look a bit. Are you okay? No, not at all. No, don't move here. Anyone who moves gets questioned. Stay still for the entire duration of this lecture. Okay, sorry. I do apologise, Ruth. I didn't mean in any. I thought you were looking like I was going to question. No, what do you mean? What was I talking about? Oh yeah, the mitzvahs. Those mitzvahs are going to give us justificational rights to gain closeness to the Creator. The Creator has nothing else he can give us but himself. Because anything else he gives us is deficient. If he gives you a yacht, it's deficient. Gives you a nice house, you've got to pay tax. Gives you a car, you've got to change the disc brakes and the pads. Everything comes at a cost, not God. God is the only thing which is ultimately perfect. It's the only thing he can give, because anything else he'd give is deficient, and he can't give anything non-deficient. So mitzvahs gain closeness rights to the infinite consciousness that we know as the creator of the entire universe. Who does this all? He's completely outside of the concept of space, dimension, time, binding, anything.
If we're closest to the infinite consciousness of the creator, do we feel it? I mean, if you go and sit in a sukkah and we say the pepper of broccoli, they shape a sukkah, so do we feel closer to the creator?
Excellent question. What I'm talking about is the closest that one feels in the reward period, which is known as Olam Haba, the world to come. This is the examination room.
It's jam tomorrow.
Please, God. Please, God. Yeah. But look, we're in an examination room.
Yeah.
We haven't yet graduated. Those that have finished the exam are no longer in this world. Remember, the most potent part of your existence that you'll ever have is while you're in this world. Souls, before they come to this world, have no choice. And they're also placed in the womb of that which will gestate them against their will.
Against their will?
Absolutely. They're going to say, who's going to be your mother? You see what I'm saying? Then they're taken from this world against their will, and then they have no more choices. While you're here, you are in the greatest potency of your existence. Just give me 1 second. I'm going to come to you. Your greatest potency of your existence. You want to say cot? You want to say cot to that?
Yeah.
You want to call cot?
No.
No. Okay. Carry on. Yeah. While you're here, you're in the greatest mode of your existence because you can choose and develop. Before you come to the world, and after you leave it, you are fixed and static. So while we're in this world, we most mimic the Creator, who is totally dynamic and can do whatever he wants, albeit though that he's still, because he can't go anywhere. Right? Because there's nowhere he can go. But the point is that he can choose to do whatever he wants. While we're here, We can choose to do whatever we want within the confines of the choices that we have. You can't do that beforehand, and you can't do that afterwards. Is everyone comfortable with that answer so far? Can I move on to the next part? Are you comfortable? Are you comfortable? Is everyone absolutely comfortable so far? You had a question. I just let me hear what the question is.
Cut.
Cut. Cut. Hey, cut. Cut.
The comment that you made a second ago, saying that the purpose of the soul is to be put into the body.
I never said that. I never said that's the purpose. I never said that's the purpose. Sorry. Listen to the tape. I remember I was on the phone to someone, an insurance company, and I said something to them. They go, no, you can listen back to the tape. I'm also taping this. You can listen back to the tape. I never said the purpose of the soul is. When the soul is placed into a fetus, right. And we are going to talk about the embryonic disc tonight. Right. When a fetus develops in the womb, how it develops from a disc. Which is why we roll mezuzahs and they aren't square or folded. Which I'll get to in a moment, because mezuzahs are the fetus. We'll get to that. Sorry, I just, that talk about cot. That sounded like a cot to me. Why can't you also do a cot? Sorry, you carry on.
Right. The problem is that you've got, in the book it says that the soul has to be forced into the body.
Yes.
If the soul is an eternal being, how is that different from an angel?
Who told you? It's not eternal necessarily.
All right. Well, if it's an entity.
It's a spiritual
How is it
thing.
Different from an angel who has to follow instructions?
We're going to do that when we get to the spiritual world. That is coming up, okay? That's fine. That's absolutely fine. That we're going to do that when we get to the spiritual realm, which is coming up in momentariness. Is that a word? I don't think so. But I like it, nonetheless. Everyone knows what it means. So we're absolutely up to speed so far. God didn't... Did God have to create the universe?
Nope.
Absolutely not. Now that God has desired... For reasons that we simply cannot possibly fathom because of our human mind, working in a modus operandi which everything is based upon a need, cannot grapple with that. Because we're not infinite creators. My thoughts aren't your thoughts. My ways aren't your ways. You're just not going to get that. Now that he's made us, he's put us in this particular situation, and he's given us a set of tasks, either to comply or disobey. Based upon our obedience... We earn justifiable rights of closeness to the infinite creator, which is the greatest, most potent pleasure that there can be.
But we don't get it till later.
It's impossible. The world isn't big enough to count in 1 millisecond of Olam Haba, because this world isn't developed for it. This world isn't built to withstand God's intense revelation.
How do you know there's going to be an Olam Haba?
There can't not be, because there's no reason that he would have made it if it wasn't for that. He only made it for the reward. So this is only a transitory stage to justify what's really meant to be coming. Otherwise, this would be a complete waste of time, and we could just... I want to go off. Can I go? No, can I just go off for 1 second? When all the world was offered the Torah, I'm going off. When all the world was offered the Torah, if nobody would have accepted it, including the Jews, I'm going to fold the world. I'm just going to completely fold the world and start again. Why? Answer, there's no justification. He has to be justified that his giving is perfect. If no one's willing to do this, if not one single person is willing to say, I am going to do it just the way you're going to tell me to do it, then what's the point? Because he's not going to give of his good to another. And you're basically keeping a going concern running as a pure expense. Does that not make it sense? You're wasting money. It's a business which is... It's a business which is not turning any profit. The profit God is looking for is the ability to justifiably give of his good to another. If no one's going to go according to the justificational rules, there's absolutely no point continuing, and he doesn't waste anything. He doesn't waste anything. So it has to continue. This is a transitory stage.
Well, I can afford it.
Okay. Quick question. Let me hear it. He had his hand up a bit earlier.
I've heard though that sometimes you do get some reward in this world. For example, you might come into money. For example,
any reward in this world is an unbelievable, terrible thing, because you are literally taking that which should be infinite, and putting it into a finite, concretized concept, which will be combustible. And once it has been consumed, that is it. So the reward that is forwarded in certain cases to people in this world is the worst possible situation. What God sometimes does is put good times in front of an individual, not as a reward, but to push them in a certain way to give them certain challenges which they wouldn't have if they weren't in that particular environment. Sometimes an individual, as we'll learn in section 3, which is shocking, and the end of section 2, sometimes God will give reward to an individual, not reward, a forwarding of good times, not for him, but for his grandchildren, to set them in a particular environment in order to test them that they need to come from a particular area that's particularly steadfast in this particular thing, and he thinks it's because of him. He thinks it's his good thing. It's got nothing to do with him. Notice when Abraham was thrown into Nimrod's furnace, there was not enough merit to save him from him alone, even looking at his whole lifetime. The angels looked ahead, based in Shalmala, to his child which he had not yet had, Isaac, who was later to offer himself as the Akedah Yitzchak. And that wasn't enough merit to save him from the fire of Nimrod. They looked ahead to the third filial generation, to Yaakov, and said, in his merit we'll save Avraham. And Avraham Avinu was saved in the furnace of Nimrod, according to the Medrash Rabbah, in the merit of Yaakov Avinu. He didn't even know that. But it was only in a third generation, sometimes that can happen, that in a third generation's merit that's coming out of you, something's going to happen for you today. And you think, oh, thank God, this happened. Got nothing to do with you. That's not a reward. That's an environmental change to give you certain concepts which you'll have to grapple with and then push that through to further generations. Because God's got a very big picture of the way he's looking at things.
So when, if a good thing happens to a bad person, that could be their reward.
So we're going to talk about that very special philosophical topic so thoroughly that by the time you're done with it, you're going to go, I hope no one ever asks me about that again. We're going to thrash through that with a diagram and graph. I have a graph. Of Tzadik V'ra'lo, of what happens to righteous people while they suffer. We'll talk about that so in depth you'll be like, whew, I'm done with that now. Don't worry, I'll put that on hold. Clive, very quickly, and then we're going to move on.
It's back to a very basic concept. We said at the beginning, God is absolutely perfect, infinitely perfect. Has no desires, no wants, no needs, no requirements.
He has desires, but he knows no needs.
If God is perfect and infinite and the whole, why does he desire to give of his love to us?
We cannot answer that question because did you just say God?
Aren't we trying to answer it by saying God desires something? What on earth gives us the power to say God has a desire?
Because the Torah told us. That's enough. That's good enough for me. 5,845 verses in the 5 books of Moses and the 24 books of the Torah. And all that gives me enough to say that he desires that. There's certain things he hates. It says hates. He hates avodah zarah. He hates idol worship. And we can say that. We can't force that. I'm not going to force that upon him. He told me this is what I like, this is what I don't like. So I'm fully within my rights to utilise that word. Getting back to Clive. We can't possibly know why God... That's the point. We can't possibly know why God desired anything. That's what I said earlier. You can't know why he desired something because his desires aren't like your desires. Because every desire you have ever or will ever experience is based on the concept of a need, not a want, a need. Everything you want is a need.
So God, you're saying that God told us through the Torah that he has this desire to give of love to
That's great. He created the entire universe to give of his good to another.
Right. And we've learned that the source of that is Torah.
And the tradition that's handed down by Moses at Mount Sinai, and every single man, woman, and child, 603,550 men between the ages of 20 and 60, all their families, all their children, and all the mixed multitude on top of that, making approximately 3 million people, all heard that and understood that absolutely clearly, as the Baruch Hashem answers in the beginning of the first chapter on the Creator. With prophetic level of understanding, which is much deeper than just learning it out. But you learn it out, you also... The Baruch Hashem said that if you think about physics, and you learn enough about physics, you'll come to that conclusion anyway. But he says, we're not going to bother wasting our time with that. You can do that in your own time. I'll go forward in the tradition that's been handed down to us. That's what he said, I think, on page 31 and 35. So far, so good? Whew, we got there, folks. Here we are. Welcome. We got to page now 75. And we already started page 75. And we started talking about this. We're now in the context of... Now I've got to give you a quick... synopsis of the step-down filtration system. This is very, very important. We touched upon this last time. Step-down filtration system. Very, very important what I'm going to tell you. We've done it before. It's good to do it again because it's vital for what we're about to discuss. I'm in M&S. I'm always in M&S. I never really shop there, but I tend to be always in M&S for this. And I'm in the St. Michael thing, who apparently was the patron saint of grocers. Not obviously our patron saint. Sorry, just carry on. And there is a beautiful granary sandwich with beautiful slices of lean ham in there. And I'm salivating. Oh, that's all. I'm really hungry. I didn't eat lunch. No one's looking. There are no CCTV cameras. No one will know. I'm in a non-Jewish area. My head is covered and I'm in disguise. And I'm thinking, I could do with that for lunch. Oh, could I do with that for lunch? I'm about to reach out my hand to that triangular plastic casing. Beautiful mayonnaise in there as well. About to put it in my basket. Press pause. All the angels of heaven looking down going, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? Now, how can I even enter into such a ridiculous environment? Let's just get this straight, okay? Let's just really get this straight. We've done this before. We're going to do it again. Okay, everyone with me? You comfortable? There's an infinite creator of the universe. We're blue oranges compared to him. We don't exist on the same level as him. We're less real than him. He invented the concept of human beings. Stomachs. The goblet cells in the stomach lining, which secrete hydrochloric acid to dissolve your food. He also invented the stomach is the only muscle with three layers that can churn. So it churns your food. You don't control this. You probably didn't even know that. He designed that. He put a sphincter on the end, like a tap to keep your food in there, so it dissolves. And then he invented the concept of hunger and need. Then he invented a world with an atmosphere that includes pigs. And he made those kind of animals things, and he gave them flesh. Then they put all the flavoids in their flesh. So when you cook it, it tastes in a particular way. Then he invented an entire farming system going all over the world where they process pigs. And he invented the concept of commerce and trade and shops and the plastic. The plastic that houses the sandwich is made from oil. Crude oil that's been refined into plastic. Where did he get the crude oil? They're digging under the sea and the oil comes out, and there's a whole industry boiling up oil into plastic so they can put the sandwiches in. And he made the entire concept. Then he had people slaughter the pigs, process the meat, slice the meat, design the calorific content and nutritional value and bomb calorimeters and food scientists and put it on a thing saying this is 78% of your daily sugar requirement. And all those things. Then he said, don't do it. And then you've got these scales. Infinite creator of the universe who is manifesting everything as a manifestation of his thought. Created the entire framework for me to even get hungry. Think about food. Eat the food. And then there's a pork sandwich. How could I be so stupid? How could you even say that that's even a choice? That's not a choice, that's crazy. If he invented the pig and said don't do it, why is that even a choice? What must he have done to allow me to even think that I could chomp that thing? Oh, another 753.64 points. Daniel Gordon. And what he uttered there was hide himself. He had to pull himself out the equation. Because if he was there with 27, imagine I'm doing that. Then suddenly God reveals himself like he did at Mount Sinai. With 600,000 angels. Six myriads. And he said, Mordechai, don't eat the pork sandwich. I know it says don't eat pork sandwich. What choice am I going to have? I'm going to put the books. I'm sorry, I was just looking. So I was interested. I was interested in the nutritional value. Anyway, who are you fooling? You wanted to eat that. Now, if he did that, would I be rewardable for not eating it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's not my choice. Someone put a gun to my head, basically, and said, don't have it. The point is that he didn't reveal himself like he did at Mount Sinai. A lot of people say to me, why doesn't God come and tell us on this generation? Why isn't there Mount Sinai? You don't need it. If you have Mount Sinai, it shouldn't be bad. Because you're only rewardable when you're told for doing something and you have the illusion of this choice. How does God manifest the illusion? He takes himself out the equation. Just enough where you can be 50-50 on a pork sandwich. Now this is crazy, because do you know how much he has to put himself out before you don't have a pork sandwich? That means the will of the infinite creator, who is unbound, inscrutable, is no more important than the desires of my stomach at that moment. That's exactly right. That's what he's got to do. Otherwise, there's no point making the whole thing. No point making the whole thing. If you made it and you didn't do it like that, you've ruined it from the beginning. Because what's the point then? How on earth does the creator pull himself out of the equation to the point that he's no more important than a pork sandwich? And what we discussed last time was a step down filtration system. It's analogy time, people. It is analogy time. You know what? In front of me here, for the people on the tape, is a bimmer with two candlesticks. I usually beat someone over the head with these candlesticks if they're sitting in the hot seat. I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to look at the light bulbs. Now, let's look at these light bulbs. These light bulbs have a switch and there's electricity going into them, and they are fluorescent, compact fluorescent bulbs. What are these? We think 4 watts? 8 watts? Whatever these two are, what do you reckon?
7.
Oh, we've got a contract electrician in the room. I forgot. Those happen to be 7 and they work on 240 volts AC, 50 hertz. 7 watts. Let's call it 7 watts. If you were to you know what? Marcus is here. I'm going to ask him. Why not? He's the contract electrician. All right, you're on. Dum, 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 dum. You're in the hot seat like a booth. My chosen special subject is electricity. now you wish you never said that now. The wires that come out of here that feed this, where do they go?
Back to the fuse board.
Back to the fuse board. Or fuse switch, whatever it is. And that energy that's in there, that is coming from, so what are they connected to in the fuse board? Where does that go?
From the street.
From the street. And now where does that go? Where does that go?
A bigger submain.
A big arc. So we've got a bigger submain. Now, what is the kind of wattage? Don't do that. I'm working with this. Ah, Zaga. Minus 10 points. You'll have to earn 10 points just to get back to scratch on this. Give me a shit. Up comes Marcus. I'd like to now continue this, dear Hashem. It's a step. That's right. Because the energy that's in these light bulbs, if you plugged it directly into the submain in the street, would blow up these lamps. Now let's keep going. From that bigger submain, where does that come from?
A station, main power station.
A huge, and where does that? A nuclear power station. What's the heart of a nuclear power station? Uranium pellets. Superheating water due to nuclear fusion. She's boiling the water so hard, and that's turning generators. The generators turn a magnet. The magnet makes an induction charge and sends forth hundreds of thousands of watts. If you took one of these guys and plugged them directly into Sellafield nuclear reactor, they go, chugging, what would happen? Go, like that. And that would be, and then they call up Marcus, go, why'd you do that? Oh, please. I thought you didn't want to stay because it's more spiritual. It's like, no, we want it to work, man. Sorry, I don't know why I said that. You can't plug these into the source of energy. If you did, they would literally cease to exist. You have to pull away, pull away, pull away, pull away, so that now they can operate on their own. We don't need a nuclear reactor in our house to run our washing machine. We'll take a little bit. But it's not safe to take that kind of energy into our home. So we keep stepping it down, until it's a fraction of what it originally was. And then with that energy, we can make it useful. Is everyone okay with that? Which is true, right? I mean, I'm not lying to you, people. You said the world was a giant carrot and a rabbit was eating. Eventually, there'll be none left. The end is nigh. I'm not saying that you could, that's cot. That really is cocked, okay, people? That's completely off. I never said that.
Well, I was asking a question.
You're going to ask a question on the rabbit?
No, I was asking a question on...
Oh, you're going to ask a question on exactly what I'm talking about?
I think so, yeah.
Let's hear it. And we cock buzzers open, just in case.
Very happy with just a yes or a no answer. Don't mean much more at the moment. Has there ever been, or is it even possible for anyone to tap into a higher source energy and have a negative repercussion, i.e. a light bulb exploding? Has anyone ever been able to tap into a heart or could tap into a heart?
You're asking an extremely complicated question. It isn't a yes-no answer.
Oh.
You have to understand the differences between tapping into energies and what energies are available to be tapped into, and ask me more specifically on different energy types. I'm sorry to be so pedantic, but that's like Marcus saying, has anyone ever tapped into a nuclear substation? The answer is define tap into where, on what? What part of it? It's too complicated as a yes-no answer. Overall, the answer is yes, but not the way you're thinking. I'm sorry, okay? Okay, so basically the question was, has anyone ever tapped into a higher form of energy and damaged anything? The answer, I can't really go into that.
What about the Sons of Aaron?
Oh, Nadav and Avihu. No, what they did was, is they tapped into an energy illegally. Not too much energy. They were told, do something. Sorry, the question was, what about Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron that entered the Mishkan, that they weren't allowed to go in and that they were killed by God miraculously? But they tapped into too much energy. They tapped into energy the wrong way. God says like this, you have to do it my way. If you don't do it my way, it ain't going to work. That's like, remember I told you, I gave the analogy with Mark, you get a phone, right? And you have, here's a phone, right? And I need to charge it up. And someone comes and tells me there's hidden energy in the walls of your house. And you can tap into the energy and become powerful. You're like... It's really true! There is hidden energy in the walls of your house. But there are power points. Unless you have three pins made of brass, exactly spaced like this, you'll never get that energy. Oh, God, who really cares? If there's really hidden energy, I can get it anywhere I want. So I'll just leave this near the PowerPoint. And what's going to happen to his phone? Ain't going to charge. Mitzvahs are specific because electrics are specific. Unless you have the right voltage, the right fuse, the right dimensions, you cannot plug it into a PowerPoint as much as you try. Unless you do it his way, it don't work. And sometimes, if you plug in wrong way, it can cause danger. You know that yellow triangle with the danger of death? There's a bloke like that. There's like a lightning bolt. Like... Do you remember him? You see him around. They're not joking. They're not joking. It's the same bloke that does the men at work sign. He does a lot. He's got a really good job, actually. All those signs are one guy. You don't realise. He's just a silhouette. I'm so sorry, that was cot. That is so cot. Why didn't you scream cot? That guy, that danger of death guy, he's real. You go in those rooms and you go, oh, look, it's really a problem. You don't do that. Why? Because it's got to be exact. That's what happened with Nadav and Avihu. There's too much. They tapped into energy wrong. Sometimes it's punishable by death. Sometimes it's punishable by a slap on the wrist. Step down filtration units. We have to pull God out the equation in order for us to have the illusion of our reality. We're blue oranges. If you jump into the blue orange dream and go, hi, I'm your creator, you're like, thump, the dream is over. You have to allow... You're going to love this. You're going to love this. Well, maybe. Not a lot, but a bit. God used to speak to Adam before the sin one-on-one. He'd come in and say, Adam, this is what you want to do. No problem at all. Well, after the sin, when they heard God strolling through the garden, what did Adam do?
He
hid behind a tree. Let's just get this straight. Adam says, the Zohar, you know, you stand with your foot and the little bit of your ankle, which is on the ground, kind of protrudes a little bit. Kind of comes out like a bump. It's not completely flat. The edge of his ankle could dislocate the sun from its orbit. It doesn't mean physically. It means the potency in the zodiac of what the sun has is nothing next to Adam. He was the most unbelievable creature. And now when God says Adam, he goes and hides behind a tree. He won't see us here. He's not even a creator. He thought trees are blue oranges in his mind. How could he make such a stupid decision to hide? God can't see behind the tree. psyche went down to a lower level. He honestly believes God can't see me. What does God say to him? Does God do it? Let's say Adam's there. Does he go? He doesn't do that. God says, where are you? You have a child and they go to play hide and seek. And I love it when children play hide. They genuinely, okay, I'll be the child and we'll play hide and seek. So you close up. One, two, three. And I do this. And they really do this, right? And you can see them. You can see them hiding behind something. And what do you do? What do you do as the guardian of that tree? You go, where are you? Why do you do that?
Playing along.
You're playing along in order to do what?
To make them happy.
Make them happy.
Not just make them happy, no, more than that.
To make them feel like they're achieving something.
To keep the game real. That's why you're doing it. Otherwise it ain't real. If you go, listen, alright, I can see it. Hide behind a leaf, go on. No, a bit more. You can see it's not a game anymore. They want, that's their level of consciousness. They really believe they're hiding. If I say to you, I can see. You, he said, where are you? To match Adam's now lower level of understanding of consciousness. Otherwise, he's got to pull himself down to whatever you're holding. Otherwise, it's not real. Do you hear this? It's vital. That's why an individual who's of a higher spiritual standing has different tests of a person on a lower spiritual standing, because they have to be balanced. God will have to, with each individual, relate to them on their own phenomenological perspective. Otherwise, it's a farce. Because if someone's really holding, then God will do open miracles. It doesn't shift it for that person. They don't care. But for someone else, it will change it. If they saw an open miracle, they would lose all their free will. Does that make sense? So he had to say, where are you? Because if he didn't, he'd be destroying his new lower deficient state of consciousness. Is that all super? Ruth, how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Just have to check, because she I moved. Saw she moved slightly.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, still there, man. Take it outside. God had to, must, is bound to, has no option, cannot do anything but create a step-down filtration system. He can't keep creation as it is without it. He is absolutely 100% bound. He has no option. He can't do it any better way. The fact that God does something one way means there's no other better way for him to do it. He doesn't think, gosh, should I make that a Lego or Meccano? There's no choice. He doesn't make choices the way we make choices. He's not, should I do this? Should I do that? It's only one perfect way, which means if he's done it one way, there's no other way he can do it. It's us that make those kind of choices. That makes sense? So he has to make a step-down filtration unit. That's the concept of the spiritual world. The spiritual world is a step down from him because he's not spiritual. He's way, way above that. The spiritual world is already a limitation because it's a world, it's defined, and it's got corporeality to it. It's got form.
What kind of existence is a level above spirituality? How can we describe it?
That is an extraordinarily deep question. The truth is that we already don't have the lexicon to describe spirituality, let alone what is above it. The Rambam says that he gives 10 different names for classes of angels and then the forces, some of which are described by the prophets as being gyroscope-like. Very unusual kind of mathematical kind of dodecahedrons rotating within each other. But beyond, that's just spiritual. What's beyond that? Who can say? Who could clothe that in words? It's enough of our duty.
How do we know that there's something above the spiritual world?
Of course. Absolutely. It's absolutely encoded in here. It has to be, because there's no other way that God could interface with physicality without a spiritual world, which has been made by something above it. Has to be like that. He's pulling it. You go, tell you what. You know what that's like saying? I can prove, although can I have a show of hands? Are you okay? Can I have a show of hands? Who here has been into a nuclear reactor? Have you been into
no.
a It was a tour. It was a tour. I was allowed in. I went into the Electric Mountain in Wales, which is a hydrothermal dam that they make. They make like a hydroelectric dam. And it's like one of the biggest suppliers of electricity in the United Kingdom. It wasn't a nuclear reactor. I've never been in, but I know they exist. How do I know they exist? What proof have I got right now? These bulbs, they've got to be powered by something. They're not powered just by the fuse box. That's not where they're powered from. That's just drawing energy from there. Something's got to be the source. Something's got to be above it. It has to be coming from something. This is the spirit. The spiritual world is nothing. These words. He said nothing. Nothing but a facilitator to allow God to have a relationship with man where man can make a choice.
Like the opposite to a tree. The roots are above and the branches are below.
Okay, if you like that. I'll go with that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. What I'm talking about, I'm not sure. That's a very nice idea, but I think that's a separate thing. What I'm talking about is you have to have a system where God can interface with man and keep bringing himself out of your consciousness. If he kept flooding your consciousness, you wouldn't have one. Remember last time we talked about the drop of water near a puddle? And the drop, if it touches the puddle, ceases to exist. It is subsumed into the mass. That's not what God wants. God does not want us. Buddhism. Just fall into the global consciousness. That's the last thing God wants from you. He wants you to be an individual with all of your individuality and utilize every fragment of your individuality as much as you can within the best possible framework of what you can be. Which is why he made us all individual. Because if he wanted us not to be individual... For all the people in tape land, you just missed that. I'm not telling you. That's why you have to be here. You missed that one. And we don't do that one again. Clive, this had better be mummish and non-cock question.
It's a non-cock question.
Go for it.
You're talking about God using the spiritual world as a route to us.
As a filter, as a screen, a mesh.
Okay.
Yeah, a sieve. I like that. It's a sieve.
We can't even access the spiritual world.
But who cares? It's not your job. I don't have to go to Sellafield and access the... You know how I access the nuclear power plant? By doing this. That's how I do it. That's all I need to do. I don't need to do anymore. I shouldn't do anymore. That's not my job. My job is to be busy here, turning on lights. You know why I've never been to Sellafield? Because I never need to go. Like it comes up on my school list. Unfortunately, you have to go to the nuclear. What can we do? It's a tax. We have to do this. It's just, no. If I never go to a main reactor ever in my life, I'm perfectly okay as long as I have electricity in my house. I don't need to know where it comes from. I just need to deal with it. I need to make sure I utilize electricity safely and correctly. I need to interface with the spiritual world. The spiritual world is there for me. It's a servant for me and for God. It serves a purpose, and that is all. Just like your kettle serves a purpose to heat water. I don't need to know where the energy comes from. I need to heat water. God wants to interface with me, so he has to have a spiritual world. And he wants me to interface with him, so he has to have a spiritual world so I can interface with him. Truth is, he doesn't need the barrier from us. It's us that needs the barrier from him. Is everyone safe on all these answers? Is this making sense? Is it making absolute such clarity that your souls are totally sated by what we're talking about so far? About what we're talking about, not about just life in general. Oh, what about me, my soul sated? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what we're talking about. God damn. 75. Point one. Don't worry. Won't be long now.
No.
Are you with me? Creation in general consists of two basic parts, the physical and the spiritual. The physical is that which we experience with our senses, and this in turn is divided into the terrestrial. Do you not have a copy? Sorry, you got a copy, right? I'm scared. Not that you can't share. Sharing is caring. The physical is that which we experience with our senses. And this in turn is divided into what? We talked about this last time. Here on terra firma. And then anything above the ionosphere is called the celestial. We talked about what it'd be like to be on the moon, to be on another planet. Is that the right thing? Is it the wrong thing for a Jew? We talked about that. The celestial includes all the heavenly bodies, the stars, the planets, the entire physical universe, not planet Earth. The terrestrial includes everything in the lowest sphere, the Earth, the water, the atmosphere, and every detectable thing they contain, up until, I think, the ionosphere. After the ionosphere, you have to call it space. The spiritual consists of all entities which aren't physical and cannot be detected or measurable by physical means. These, in turn, are also divided into two categories. Highlight. For those who have been studious enough to bring highlights, for those that are new, you're going to need to bring highlighters and pens and stuff. We're going to put, and the highlight points, we go back and forth in cross-reference. Highlight, souls and transcendental beings. Those are the two things, souls and transcendental beings. Spiritual things are either souls or transcendental beings. Souls comprise of a class of entities created. Not a part of Hashem. Remember my standard pet peeve? Your soul is not a bit of God. That cannot be, because the soul is created. It's a finite thing that's circumscribed. God isn't. Your soul can't be a bit of God. To be put into physical bodies. There is a religion that believes that God goes into a physical body and he manifests in a physical body. That's not ours. Okay?
Well, if we say everything started off in the beginning, there was only Hashem. So everything...
No, there was no beginning for Hashem. You can't say in the beginning.
No.
In he's beyond time.
This universe, in the beginning of creation.
The first things he created, right, were transcendental beings. He laid transcendental beings.
We came from him.
We came...
There was nothing else.
We came from a manifestation of his will. That's like saying the blue-orange in my mind is not me. The blue-orange is not me. It's not me. It's a figment of my imagination. Yes, am I energizing it? 100%. Is the blue orange me? Absolutely not. Can't be. Otherwise, there'd be no individuality. It's definitely not you. Your dreams aren't you.
But you've created it.
You've energized it. That's correct, but it isn't you. Okay. Scott is definitely able to create something which isn't him. In fact, he can't create anything which is him. He can't make another him. He can't, because that him would be beholden to him. Remember the logic? You can't get out of that one. Where would he put him? Can't make a Mrs. God. It's impossible. It would be beholden to him. It can't be as perfect as him, right? So the souls and transcendental beings. Souls comprise a class of spiritual entities created to be put into physical bodies. I.e. they have structures which are designed to be mated to certain organs within a physical receptacle. Like wires to be joined and strongly bound to these bodies. You can put a cross-reference, see page 279, which you do later. You can just scribble it on the side. Contrast with page 279. Acting upon them, these physical bodies, in order to perform various functions in them at times. Okay, people, give me some nachas, please. I could really do with it at this time. What is the purpose of a soul?
To purify the body.
Oh, guys, you're doing me good here. What is the purpose of a body? To be purified by the soul. Excellent. Transcendental beings comprise a class of spiritual entities that are not, underline the word not, created to be put in physical bodies. That's what's different about them. They're soul class beings that aren't designed to be bound to physical mammalian animals. These, in turn, are also divided into two categories. So the non-soul spiritual thing has two sets. The first category consists of the forces, and the second, that of angels.
the purpose of the forces then?
I'll get onto it. 33. Okay. All right. There is an interesting note, which is superscript number 33. And the way that the notes work in this book is you go to the end of the book, and it's sections 1, 2, and 3, part 1, 2, and 3. This will be part 1. And it's note in part 1, number 33. Then it starts again, part 2. It starts off with 1 again. So it isn't just like a running total. And he says, now on my book it's page 361, but on your book it'll be far later because you have an essay at the end of your book, which I don't have, which we may do later.
409.
Is it page 409, which is point 33 on part 1? Mm-hmm. Here we go. See below section 4, chapter 6, point number 13, where the author distinguishes between the world of angels and the world of forces, as we've just been asked here. In Kabbalistic terminology, the universe of angels is Yetzirah, formation, while that of forces is Bria, creation. Skip down to the end of the quotes. Besides meaning force, the word koyach also means potential, as opposed to action. Action is what we do. We're in the world of action. Concepts are conceived potentially among the forces and then translated into action by the angels. The word for angel in Hebrew is malach, which means messenger, and coming from the same root as meaning work, malocha. The Kabbalists therefore speak of the world of forces as the universe of thought, because it's all in a concept, and the angels as speech or expression, and humans as doers. Now this touches upon the picture I showed you last time, which I didn't give out. And if you see on the side, I've written mind, thought, speech, action. I'm not giving these out yet. There's going to be a summation after we do this. But it's like this. You want to share it? I'm good with it. Yeah, you can?
No, I'm just laughing. You keep bringing that out and telling us about
it. No, I can't do it yet because I don't want to confuse you with it. I want you to do it after you understand the main concepts. Okay? The answer's like this. You're a traffic light. Can I just give you this? You're a traffic light. Now, do you know they dig up the roads and there are these like diamond kind of sensors under the tarmac? And those sensors detect when cars are above them. Next time you look on the ground, you'll see there's like cut lines near traffic lights. And those wires inside those sensors go to like a green box with a light on often on the corner by the traffic lights. And those, the cars go on and they sit there and the traffic light goes, oh, there's 70 cars there, 42 cars there. I think I'll turn that one red and that one green. And it works it all out. With me so far? Makes sense? Everyone? Shit, where's he going with this? Yeah, where's he only going with this? Who programmed that? There's had to be a computer programmer somewhere saying, the algorithm that I'm going to set is when there's a certain number of cars, you'll turn red, and when there's a certain number of cars, you'll turn green. That had to come from the mind of someone. When that mind, as it were, is the original, in the analogy, will of God saying, I want to get something done. But here's how does he actually get cars to stop? That's very nice. He's in a room somewhere in the DVLA, somewhere in Swansea. And he's thinking, you know what? It'd be really good if cars stopped according to this algorithm. Well, that's good. Well, how are you going to get that done? The answer is he writes an algorithm. He places that algorithm in a framework with sensors that are then connected to three flashing lights. And the actual flashing light is the bottom actual output of that. From the mind of the programmer to stopping cars. The step-down filtration system isn't just about energy, it's about a concept. I want something to happen in the world, going through the framework, which then has to be translated into physical action. This is how you get from some guy in a room tapping on a keyboard, which is a totally abstract, non-concretized concept, even the maths is not really concretized, all the way down to people sitting at a red light, which is totally endpoint concretization. That's the concept of mind down to action. Back into the main text, page 75. These transcendental beings, which are higher, as it were, than the souls, also exist on many different levels, I would add. Each type having its own laws and distinct nature, depending upon its level and place in the general scheme. So great is the variation between angelic types that each group could be called a different species and a different class. But the general class is angelic. Let me give you an example. A child comes up to you and says, "What is a bee?" What would you say?
An insect.
Oh, come on, that's a bit advanced. What's a bee? Bottom line. It's an animal. A child comes up to you and says, "What's an elephant?"
Animal.
It's an animal. So he thinks animals are... But a bee and an elephant are... There's a very small elephant and a very large bee, these ones. A bee and an elephant are extraordinarily different from each other. One has an exoskeleton made of chitin, which is a giant polysaccharide, and all of its internal organs are inside it, and it flies and has a compound eye, and it's an insect, and it has all insects, and of insects there are subclasses. And another is a mammal, big trunk, is huge, big land mammal, totally different. But they're both animals. But you could never say that a bee is like an elephant. I mean, yeah, they're animals, but that's about it, right?
DNA of a bee and an elephant is almost identical.
Actually, it isn't. It isn't almost identical. It's closer than you would have thought. But that's all. But certainly everything about them is very, very different. To say angelic is like saying animal. There's just so much to talk about. There's so many species and classes. At the bottom of this picture, which I'm not going to give out yet, is a duck. A duck. This duck is a character. His name is Bob the Mallard. To anyone that's done this course before, you're going to love this. We're going to come back to Bob the Mallard. Oh, you're right. We're nearly done. Bob the Mallard, because we've got to stop because the caretaker gets grumpy, so don't worry. Bob the Mallard is the last thing we'll discuss tonight. We have to do Bob the Mallard. I'm going to come back to Bob the Mallard over and over again, because Bob the Mallard is our friendly duck. Bob the Mallard lives on a pond in Hendon. Hendon is an area inside London. For those northerners that don't know that. Because every time I say Crawley or Reading, you're like, what? London, Hendon, is a place, there's a pond. Bob the Mallard has to migrate. God wants Bob the Mallard to migrate. Does God reveal himself in all of his grandeur and take all the angels of heaven and go, "Bob, fly to Africa"? Did you do that? Come on, tell me yes or no. It could be. No, he doesn't. Absolutely he doesn't. You know how he does it? Now we're actually going to start opening the bonnet and looking at a running engine. And we're going to start naming things like alternator, spark plugs. Is where we're going to go now. You have to go with me for Bob the Mallard. This is how it goes. The will of the concept. I want Bob the Mallard. Just like the guy with the algorithm in the DVLA says, Bob should migrate. That's the end of it. Because if God gets any closer in the system, he'll destroy it. You have to pull him out now. How does he pull himself out? He has made a system that deals with that thought. Almost like the edict of a monarch. The queen doesn't say to you, oh, she knocks on your door. New tax this week. Just thought I'd let you know. Thanks, Liz. That never happens. She goes and says, we will be opening a new tax to everyone. And then like a year later, something happens. This is how it works. These primordial forces are like train tracks. They're the nervous system of the body. They are already plugged into the body and they attach to every element of the body. The angels are the carriages, the cars, the electric pulses which go down the neural system. Am I going to do this? I'm going to do this. I've done it before for some of you. Haven't done it for others of you. If this doesn't profoundly change your life forever, for the rest of your life, I'm doing it wrong. If you don't understand or accept this, I'm doing it wrong. If this doesn't absolutely change you as a human being from now until the time you leave this earth, I'm doing it wrong. And then you need to tell me you did it wrong because it didn't affect me. In the image of God, he created us, right? Heard of that? Watch what I'm going to do. For the tape, I'm going to take a stance. I'm going to take a stance, almost like Kung Fu, where my... I'm going to just stand here. Why not? I'm going to just like separate my legs ever so slightly, completely straight, and squat a little bit. I'm going to take my shoulders, straighten them out, and then put my arms on either side of my body. Okay? Now, some of you have seen this, some of you haven't. Okay? I'm going to turn my head all the way around to one side. Okay? So that's literally like that, completely, completely flat. Yeah, you good with me so far? Inside my head is a brain and then a spinal column going down my spine, right? Okay. My head is shaped, if you take my neck and my head, is the shape of the letter Yud. Can you see that?
Just draw it again.
This is a...
I know a Yud, but on your...
Okay, look at this on the Parochus. There's a Yud here, right?
Yeah.
So this will be my eyes facing this way. The little tip at the top would be if I'm waiting to fill in. And this is my neck. Can you see that?
Yeah.
So far, so good?
Yeah.
So this is my head. So far, so good. My spinal column going straight down the middle of my body is a Vav. I don't have one knitted here to show you, but it's basically a Vav. In fact, the top of the Vav is the Yud.
Yud Kei Vav Kei over there, Vav. Oh,
very good. Yeah. Let's do Yud Kei Vav Kei. He's ahead of me. There's a Vav, right? But that's it stylized. It doesn't look quite what I'm talking about. The clout, right, my shoulder blade is counteracting a perpendicular to my spine. Can you see this? It's my shoulder blade. Can you see that? And then I've got two of these. This comes out into the third dimension. Can you notice that? That's why the hay has a leg which is floating. To show you, like a 2D creature, this comes out into a third dimension. You hear what I'm telling you? A hay is a dalet with a floating yud upside down, right? Yeah, there you go. This kind of thing, right? It's really meant to be like a yud. The point is, this isn't connected to the top dalet. That shows you it's floating. It's coming out into another dimension. Look at my arms. They're coming out. My pelvis is the top of the next hay down. And my legs are also coming out. That's the lower hay. Look at a human body. It's built around a Yud Kei Vav Kei stacked vertically. We're physical manifestations of his name. When Moses saw him at the burning bush, he said, not sorry. When he spoke to him at the burning bush, he said, what am I going to tell them who sent me? I am that which I am. We said that was a huge revelation. I is what I is. I just is. There's nothing like me. I is what I is. I just exist. I am. I can't go back and tell them that I is what I is came and said. You can't tell me to say that. Okay, I will be known as your giver. Why did he give him that name? Because it's a name they can relate to. Why is a name you can relate to? You! Did you get this? We're physical manifestation of the name itself. The top, which is the Yud, which is Chochmah. Chochmah is wisdom. Where's the seat of wisdom in the body? At the top, in the brain. Vav means a hook. The word Vav is a hook, which means it hooks down. Out of the Vav comes all the spinal processes, with all the nerves that attach to everything. That's a Vav, that's the hook. And the Hay is the action of doing. Your arms and your legs take you places and your hands do stuff. Doesn't that make utter sense? How could you not have seen that? It's so real, it can't be argued with. People look like that. Just wake up, Uri, Uri, share the baby, we said. Wake up! It's look, look! It's your physical manifestation of his name. Puts that pork sandwich in perspective, doesn't it? Bob the Mallard. How am I going to get him to my... Are you with me so far? How am I going to get Bob the Mallard to my grave without destroying Bob the Mallard? I'm going to think, Bob, my great, there's a nervous system in place. The nervous system is just sitting there the whole time. That's the koichos. Those are the transcendental forces. That's the primordial forces which act as the train tracks. Then they turn it right. Print out from the top. Print out from the... Right, what's on today, lads? What's the job lot? Bob Mard must migrate. Who's in charge of animals on planet Earth? I'm the force in charge of that. Right, you deal with that. Fine, that's it. Right, Bob the Man, step down. Bob the Man must... Oh, for goodness sake, this is what... Bob the Man... Oh, you know what? I'm in charge of all life on Earth. Who is in charge of animals here? He's in charge of... here you go, in charge of... Deal with it, okay? I'm in charge of animals. Ha, ha, ha. I'm in charge of animals. I'm in charge of... This is for birds. Whoever's in charge of birds. Who's in charge of birds? You're in charge of birds. You go do that. Birds. Well, this is birds. This is birds. It goes down to birds. I'm in charge of all birds. This is a prey bird and non-prey bird. This is a bird which is predated upon. Give it to the koichos, which is to do with the predated bird. It goes all the way to... In your brain, you think, reach out, touch the glass. So you reach out, touch the glass. But that's got to go all the way down to the bits that come out through the clavicle, down through the spinal process, over the humerus, into the deep radial nerve, and then you make the final motor recruitment over there, and you have actions, you're touching the glass. All that is coming. It doesn't just come out of your mind. It has to go down through your arm. Out comes, I'm in charge of birds. Prey birds? Yeah, prey birds. Well, I'm all prey birds. We're now talking about ducks. Who's in charge of ducks? I'm in charge of ducks. You must deal with Bob the Mallard. Hold on, this is all ducks. Who's in charge of the species of ducks that only inhabit the Northern Hemisphere? I'm in charge of that. Fight, that's yours. Northern Hemisphere? Oh, this is Mallard's. Office, you need to get to the right office. You need the Mallard office. Oh, don't do that. Mallard office. Oh, sorry, I'm gonna try a bit. Oh, hello, Zip. What's this? Oh, Bob the Mallard. Shh. This is Mallards in Europe. We need the spiritual force in charge of Mallards in Europe. Mallards in Europe, Mallards in Europe. Mallards in the United Kingdom. Mallards in the United Kingdom. Mallards in London. Mallards in London. Another force down all the way, going all the way down the bottom. Mallards in Hendon. That Mallard, Bob, on that pond right there. That's the nervous system. That's World 2. World 3 is now the angels. Exactly the same thing happens because the angels are the carriages on the tracks. They're the electronic impulses flowing through the system. Right, so next down to the world of angels. We've got the moment. Angels like, oh, God, it's been a long day today. But now, who's in charge of animals on the planet? Goes all the way down exactly the same until an angel actually innovates Bob the Mallard. He's under a direct control of a spiritual energy. I don't mean some bloke in a white gown going, ling, ling. That's not what it's not angels. We're talking spiritual energies, angels. It's a mirror image. Imagine the train tracks. The train tracks have all been laid. So there's one train station that stops at Ongar. But it's connected to an entire network that's really connected to every single train track in the United Kingdom, right? So the carriages that go down, there's points and systems and turns and... Who's going to go down there? The angels are like the carriages that go... They're like the electronic impulses going up and down the nerves which stay there.
At the same time, so far we've got the force that is in charge of Bob the Mallard at that point.
And that force becomes innovated or enlightened or energized or active. And that means the Malachim, which are dealing with that force, must go down the whole route until they get the job done. This is called deterministic flow. Otherwise known as determinism. It's known as determinism. That's how God interfaces with Bob the Mallard. He does not come to Bob the Mallard in a prophetic revelation going, Bob, I would like you to go to Africa. He's made a step-down filtration system because if he did appear to Bob the Mallard, Bob the Mallard would be a bag of feathers. Bob the Mallard cannot exist in front of the intense energy of the nuclear reactor of the creator. Is this making any sense to anyone? I know that some people are having a bit of a, ooh. Is that making any sense to anyone? It's a framework. Like the car stopping at the light. There are wires and everything. The wires, the koichos. The electricity flowing through the wires, sensing cars, are the angels. The algorithm is what's been written into the koichos by the programmer, who's in a world above that. And in his thought, is like the world of thought. It's finally manifesting in a line of cars that are starting to develop at this red light. That's Bob the Mallard happening, doing what he's told. The spanner in the works. is Bob's mate, Jim. Jim is a human being. And this human being was told, don't chop down fruit trees. If they're bearing fruit, you can't chop them down. Except Jim has a wife. Comes home, and his wife is saying, you know, we could really do with a coffee table. What can I do? All the trees around here are fruit trees. Yeah, but you know what? I've got nowhere to put my coffee. And she nags him. Day after day, I need a coffee. You day, you lousy, good for nothing. You don't give me a coffee table. And years of this abuse have ground Jim down. And one day he takes an axe and he chops. I never thought of that. And he kills her. No more nagging from you. I would never have thought of that. That's pretty intense. And he takes an axe and he goes to the fruit tree. That's a different kind of Avera. And he goes to the fruit tree and he starts hacking at the fruit tree. Now the problem is Bob can't do anything but migrate when he's told. He's a deterministic element. He doesn't have free will. But this bloke Jim has been told, don't chop down fruit trees. And he goes, you know what? For a bit of peace in my life, yeah. I'm going to chop down a fruit tree. And after 100 times, God's going to go, why did you chop down a fruit tree? Because my wife. The problem is how can that possibly happen? Everything else, the fruit tree, the concept of coffee, everything else is stable. Man was then given a directive, don't do it. If he goes along and does chop it down, how does the system not break? Answer is, it's designed to be flexible enough to respond to man's input. And that is what we're going to discuss next week. How Bob the Mallard and Jim exist in a world where God forces most everything to do what he wants. Atoms, gases, plasma, liquids, are all obeying immutable laws of the universe. The sun doesn't make a mistake. Jupiter, Saturn, electrons, neutrons,
ice,
whatever, don't err. But people can say, you know what? Forget it. I'm not playing by the rules. We're the only thing that can. We're the only thing that does. So that shows, ergo, that we must be designed to be able to flagrate the rules. Isn't that great? Poof! Goes all the concepts of spontaneous creation in the logical cloud. The system is designed to take both. This spiritual framework, which is a step-down filtration system between the infinite creator and the finite creations, is robust enough to be able to dictate deterministic influences within it, and yet take indeterministic influences that arise from the end of the circuit, which is us, without breaking. It's malleable and flexible enough to be able to resist the change. It must be, otherwise there'll be no free will. All of that allows us to say no. I'll drop down a tree. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because otherwise, there's no free will. If it's all Bob the Mallard, if it's all deterministic, then I can't, when I take the axe and I hit it, boom, it actually turns out it's actually a massive bar of metal. Only joking, can't do it. That's not free will then. You have to actually make it destroyable by me. And then say, don't destroy it. You have to say, don't eat it, but make it edible. You have to do that. Because the whole system breaks.
That allows Hitler to kill 6 million Jews.
You have to allow it, because if he couldn't do it, then there's no choice.
But these commandments are written in the Torah, which is really a lot are addressed just to Jews, not non-Jews. So it's okay for
don't the non-Jews have the 7 Noahide laws as encoded in the Rambam, Laws of Kings, Chapter 9, Law 1?
Yeah, but they don't.
Also found in Gomorrah Sanhedrin.
No,
and they got
they
that.
They don't read the Sanhedrin.
Who
though.
Cares? Most Jews don't read the Torah. Don't give me that as an excuse. Who here has read the whole thing back to front? Most Jews don't. So you can't say, well, the Gentiles don't know their Torah. That's okay. You've got the Torah, you do want to read it, read it. You don't want to read it, don't read it. It's got to be an option. People, it has been an honour to readdress you here tonight. Really, I hope you've gained something beneficial out of this. What we'll do next time is talk about the ins and the outs of the spiritual dynamics of the spiritual world, what you can do, what you can't do, what you can get away with, what you can't get away with, and how the whole system works so clearly. You'll be so clear on this, you'll realise, I can't believe I had any questions on it. Because that's where the rum hole takes us. People, it has been amazing. Thank you so much. Why isn't it